Hey everyone, we are live for our Sunday weekly warm-up here at the Teach Better team. We are streaming exclusively in our private group over at teachbettergroup.com, or if you're catching this either on the podcast of Teach Better Talk or on Monday when we stream this out to all of our networks, either happy Sunday or happy Monday. We're really glad that you are here. We have a great friend that I've been waiting months and months and months to have on, so I'm so excited for you all to meet John. And we also, of course, are going to be here talking shop, getting you ready for your week ahead. It is officially March. We are headed to the first full week of March, which means we survived January and February. So shout out to us. And we have some good tips and tricks to add some excitement back into your classroom and your lesson design. So feel free to use the comment section to say hello to your friends and family. Remember, everybody that is streaming in this private group will see each other's comments. So we're not only sharing resources here on the live stream, but also in the comments. And we'll be right back. Hey everyone, we have John here with us for the Sunday weekly warm-up. John, how are you doing?
I am doing wonderful. Thanks so much, Ray, for having me on, and excited to check out the discussion happening in the comments too.
Oh, it's going to be so fun. That's what I love about our Sunday weekly warm-up specifically. This live streams exclusively in our private group. So anybody that comments gets to see each other's comments, which is fun. Our other live stream, our Wednesday Wake Up, streams on all these platforms. And on the back end, you and I, we would be able to see all the comments, but they can only see the platform that they're participating in. So you kind of miss like some of the fun, some of the jokes, the one-liners. I love the Sunday show. Everyone gets to be a part of everything. Fancy schmancy.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So for John, I know that we have had this scheduled for months and months and months. I'm so glad it's finally here. Will you share a little bit about who you are, what you do in education, kind of all that jazz?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, my name is John Spike, and I started as a high school language arts teacher and moved into kind of that tech integration specialist role. You know, your districts might call them different things, tech coaches, all that. And after that, actually, now what I do currently for my kind of, you know, weekly job is coordinator of instructional technology and integration services at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater in kind of the College of Ed. And basically, that's a long title. That means I make sure that, number one, folks have the skills and the strategies necessary, future teachers and our instructors who work with future teachers, they have the strategies necessary to integrate tech in a meaningful way. And then also just that they have the tech they need. We're exposing them to new and emerging tech and just, you know, making sure that everything is cooperating so that they can be successful in that. And then I guess just personally, my side business is a company called GameStorm EDU. And we design educational games, specifically board and card games, because I'm a nerd. And I'll just show these just shipped into the United States. So I'm pretty excited. This is our commercial release GameStormers. This has been like a 2+ year project in the making, but this is a game where you design a game and it's designed for classroom use, library, makerspace. And these are now, shameless plug, now available for sale, made by teachers for teachers and students. So yeah, sorry, Ray, there might be some shameless plugging. I hope that's okay with the viewers.
John, I literally brought you on for the shameless plug because you and I have continued over the years to bump into each other at conferences to the point that every time we're like, John, I haven't seen you in 100 years. How are you? And we say it every time. Like, even if it's been only a year, it seems like every tech conference in the Midwest, you and I get to do the awkward, like, it's good to see you. I haven't seen you in forever. It's great. And then we fail to keep in contact in between. So I apologize for that. But what I love is that every time I talk to you, you have a new fun thing you're working on. And when you were showing me the prototype for the game that you're working on, which was months and months ago, I know that it's continuing in its development. Everyone can now go grab it. But I was like, this is not something we expose our Teach Better community to very often. And so I really felt like this is a fun opportunity to talk about something we very rarely get insight on. So we're going to pick your brain the entire time. So feel free to shameless plug as you go.
Sounds good. Yeah. And honestly, some of the things I'll talk about, I think we all incorporate the spirit of, you know, kind of playful learning and game-based learning. And we might not consider ourselves, you know, in that world, but we do so many subtle things that have just like good game design principles at heart in it. So I will say, you know, some of you in the chat might be going, oh yeah, I don't do that, but you really do in some of just the ways you approach good teaching. So I think it's embedded in everything we do. It's just that we sometimes don't identify and go, oh yeah, that's something that games do well and we do well as teachers. So I'll just get that clarification in there. I bet there's a lot of it happening.
Yeah, I really think that that's important to discuss and something that you're going to have to give us that wide spectrum of support. Like the beginners want support and also our advanced, maybe big gamers here in this community are going to want support from you throughout the show. I will tell you, John, and I want to admit this openly because I'm embarrassed to say, I think when people tell me they want to incorporate games into the classroom, I'm immediately intimidated. And it's not because I'm unwilling. I am super willing. I love creativity. Games as a concept, sign me up. I don't know how, so like it's intimidating and I haven't done it. And in my mind, I'm like, I haven't done it at all. Maybe I've done it a little and just don't know it. But I'm excited today to talk about not only the games you're working on, but also like some natural steps we can take maybe as early as this week to start to see how we use these skills and strategies in the classroom all the time, so it becomes less and less intimidating. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's perfect because I really, when I kind of share strategies and resources on the website or with the game, it's all about, you know, something you could do tomorrow or something you could build towards. And so I try to differentiate it. The game is actually differentiated for, I have 10 minutes to give your game. I have a class period to give to your game. So I designed it with teachers in mind, knowing the stresses of I don't have time to play a fully fleshed out game. You know, we're not going to sit down and play Risk for a week in a class because Number one, everybody would hate each other at the end of it. And number two, like every minute is valuable. So yeah, there are going to be some tomorrow and some, you know, this could be a whole summer school course, right? You know, so a lot of different variations.
Well, what I preach about this, John, is like, we'll be able to have a good discussion for all different types of educators here in this conversation. And then they can stay connected to you and throw questions and ideas your way to kind of brainstorm. Because I at least want us to all commit here in the chat. If you're watching live, especially with us, we're all going to commit to stay open-minded, even if we're scared, intimidated, because I will admit I'm one of those people. But I love what you're doing, John. And I'm so excited that you are now officially part of the Teach Better family.
Yeah. And I do appreciate just being able to chat and discuss and hear from, maybe if folks want to throw in the chat, kind of some things they do and kind of this, you know, playful and kind of teaching with a kind of game designer's heart kind of attitude. I'd love to see what people do in this vein. And I think honestly, all teachers are kind of designers of like this experience. And really that's what game designers are too. So I think they're one in the same. And what's interesting is I'm in a lot of Facebook groups of board game designers. And it's amazing. They'll do a, hey, what profession are you in? And I swear almost half of the people in that are teachers in that game design forum. And so it's really, I think it comes naturally that we love to design with the end goal in mind. We love to design something that's going to give people interesting choices, that's going to get some laughs, that's also going to make you feel like you're building towards something big. And I think teachers and games do that, right? So
I love that challenge, John. It's a perfect challenge to give our community here as we are diving into our discussion coming up next. Feel free to add your thoughts on that topic and also let us know what you teach, because John is going to not only be chatting with us live on screen, but also responding to your comments as we go. So we'd love to have some context if you're a middle school teacher watching, elementary, high school, maybe you're in higher ed. We'll be right back. Hey everyone, we are back for our Sunday weekly warm-up, diving into our discussion here with John, focusing on gaming. Thank you for all of you that are here and participating in the chat. That's the best part of our Sunday. Remember that if you are catching the show after the fact as a recording, you just need to pop on Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern over at teachbettergroup.com, and you can participate live anytime you want. John, we were just getting into our discussion about how incorporating gaming can not only not be intimidating, but also might be something we're already doing and just not being aware of it. Would you mind giving us some ideas of maybe some things our community here aren't aware of that actually is thinking with the gamer's mindset?
Yeah, I think one thing that we do and we can always do more of, and I'm always puzzled by this one, but I think something games do really well, and it could be board or card games, which is where I design, or video games or any type of games that you play, Wordle, whatever it might be, right? I think what they do is they really help us like see our growth and see our skill development. We see almost like that skill tree of our character in a role-playing game. We see us like advancing, and I see myself building up and unlocking new kind of routes of my growth. And one thing that always is a struggle for me is showing my students, like, yes, during the course of our course or this year, you've developed so many skills, but it's hard to see those. Like, a game has an interface where you see the tree, you see the level up, and any way you can do that. I actually started making skill trees for my students, and my students are college age, adult age, going back to get like, a master's or things like that. And I found it's really helped. Like, they almost see. And what's cool about a skill tree, when you see, like, I started here and I unlocked like good coaching strategies, and it opens up now differentiating using tech. I think it also mirrors like those synapse connections we make in the brain, right? So when you think about what's actually happening in our brain biology, and I'm an ELA teacher, so I apologize to any science teachers if I just like completely like miss a term here, but like, you actually like are forging those connections and connecting everything. And same thing is happening. You're developing skills, and that tree is growing in a game. And any way we can help students see that and see the growth, I think, is helpful. And I think what goes along that with that too is helping make learning visible. And I think just a tomorrow, so that would be like a big picture. How can you help students see that, like, unlocking and growth? And Ray, I know you're a math background, and I think math has such a natural tree that sprouts out of it, right?
That's exactly what I was thinking when you said that. I was like, oh, that works really well for a math class.
Yeah, for sure. And I, as an ELA teacher, we have a lot. Like, our tree is kind of all over the place. There's a lot that goes into the skill of writing or reading with, with comprehension and everything. But same principles can apply. And I work in tech integration courses, so I teach at digital tools, but there's still a tree that forms. So that's like a down the road. Like, that's not a tomorrow. You're just going to build out like the beautiful like visual of, hey, students, here's everything you're going to see yourself develop. But a tomorrow thing that I really like is just making the learning visible of students always have a space where they're conveying their current understanding, questioning. And I tell my faculty staff, like, just even giving everybody a blank Google slide, and that's their slide. It's a shared deck. And please add everything, a resource you found that connects to our conversation, a visual that you think maybe captures it, whether you've sketched it, whether you've dropped in, a collection, questions that are lingering for you. And we can easily pull up that deck. I can go to the deck and say, Joe, what did you have? And I can pull up Joe's deck, and Joe can share, hey, I found this. This seems like a really interesting connection. And that's a part of like us seeing like the discussion almost visualized. Games do this because we're constantly adding to like maybe our tableau of cards in front of us. Games do this really well. I mentioned the skill tree. Games have us convey our understanding. And a lot of party games I like to play, I love what I've put so much. I'll take a picture of it. Like, I love this absurd picture I drew in Telestrations, right? And we want our students probably to do the same things. Like, they're proud of going back to the deck and seeing how they, metaphorically represented a concept with visuals. And so anything we can do to help that become visual, I think, is something that people already do in this chat. And I think just any way you can dedicate yourself to making that invisible visible, which is the learning, the progress, and the understanding. So yeah, that would be one piece I just think that comes naturally to all of us, but we can always be doing better.
I love that visual right off the bat of either the skill tree or using Google Slides to help you do this. I'm thinking, even if it's, I know it's halfway through the year now, even more than half, but this would be a good time. You could almost build a skill tree with students to recap all the things you have learned and kind of almost preview where you're headed for the rest of the year. I feel like that visual for me is like so spot on of where I would go. And I love being able to take a discussion and putting that into a visual form. Your focus on making the invisible visible is a very non-intimidating start, because I know as educators, we're constantly striving to use all sensories to support our students' learning. Obviously, thinking through visuals is a big one. I think that's a really realistic support for a teacher who just wants to get started.
Yeah, I think, one question that I think a lot of folks had when we entered that full-scale pandemic remote learning, I think it was a big question of how will I kind of see and know they're engaged? And that was where how do you make it visible is if they do have that space and they're filling that space with their kind of cognition and their thought process. I think that's powerful. And I came out of the pandemic going, why would we stop doing that? Like, even if we're face-to-face or hybrid or whatever format we're in, why would we stop that kind of space that helps kind of show where they're at?
Well, and John, what I love about what you just shared is so many of us were in such a tough place trying to figure out teaching during the global pandemic. And then when many of us went back to the classroom, there was a little bit of desire to almost go back to what we already knew and trying to find a balance between what we had learned and needed to keep versus what we had learned and wanted to resort back to something that we thought was more effective. There was so much of that, but something I really want to celebrate is you're identifying something that we actually all worked on that hopefully we all kept. And if we haven't kept it, here's your reminder to implement it back of making that invisible visible. And I love the connection between COVID, because you're right, we all were striving to make anything we could visible so that as teachers, we could support our students that were no longer in front of us and easily accessible. So super cool connection there. I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah. And again, I think there's going to be a number of things that we don't realize it just as at the heart of a good, like kind of playful learning or game-based experience. I'm also appreciating, I just have to shout out, I don't know if it's direct connection, but Stacey brought up Shut the Box. And I love Shut the Box. And I think as a young kid, I was like overlaying my story of like the action that was unfolding as I was throwing the dice for Shut the Box. So I just got a kick out of Stacey sharing the Shut the Box one. And it'll actually, that'll set up like some of my other thoughts on how we can implement, you know, kind of this game-based and playful learning later on. Stacey's kind of set me up there with the Shut the Box example. If I'm thinking of the same Shut the Box as Stacey is.
Yeah, it's the one where you have the dice and you're trying to get the numbers enclosed.
Yeah, right? Yep, okay. Yeah, that's what I was picturing. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know if that's, I think that's what Stacey's talking about, because she's talking about addition. So I love that box. Yeah. Or I love that game. If you guys have any kiddos, I really feel like it's for any age group, but I guess specifically for addition or multiplication, it must be valuable. But anyway, go pick up that game if you haven't done so already. John, what are some other things that might be game-focused strategies that some of us here might be using without thinking through it being a gaming strategy?
Yeah, one piece that I jotted down that I think is so crucial is, and something that is cited by a lot of folks who talk about how games inform them in their future careers. I think one big one is system thinking. And so understanding how different variables at play impact each other. And that's such a crucial skill. We see it in every field of if I can kind of weigh the risk reward of managing this resource, how would it impact this one? How do these two concepts interrelate? And really, I think system thinking is something really neat that happens. And what's cool about game design is really when you design a game, you're creating a system and you want the system to be dynamic and interesting. And the same thing is so true about everything that we really learn about, whether it's math, whether it's the art of writing and designing, you know, interesting prose, whether it is, you know, understanding how a scientific system works and why these laws of kind of nature exist and why they can function as they do. And so one thing that I really love when I kind of talk with and brainstorm with teachers about, you know, using kind of a game design approach is how can your students kind of demonstrate their understanding of a concept by designing almost a miniature like game system, you know, involving it. And so some fun questions that I think go around with that. One activity that I've got on our website, shameless plug, is just designing concept cards. And so we've actually taken, I'm just going to have an excuse because I love our game box. Like one thing I've done is I've taken like our beautiful cards from Game Stormers and I've actually made them blank in a template on our site. And you can actually go, your students can go grab them, print them, or just use a Google slide deck of them and make their own cards of something they're learning about. You know, if it was cellular biology, maybe they make cards that represent mitochondria and the chloroplast, and they talk about how those two cards would interact with each other, what kind of abilities they would have, you know, what kind of currency exists in your game. And I think that's one of the brainstorming questions we ask is, okay, if this concept you're learning about was a system, what would be the kind of the variable being exchanged? Is it energy? You know, if you were learning about social studies, would it be like political capital, right? Would it be like trying to get those electoral votes? What is that push-pull, and how do these cards interact with that main piece that's really at the center of this focus? And so having students make a set of concept cards or make them with each other and say, how would these interact if they were in a game? And then you start seeing the students who love certain games, right? You see the students who gravitate towards Pokemon, or you see students gravitating towards a whatever it might be, a Fortnite or whatever the soup du jour of a game is at the time. And they start kind of overlaying that game world, but how would it apply if it was politics? How would it apply if it was math principles? And it's really kind of a fun activity, but I think that's a really cool one, is having students think in systems and how these pieces interact. What would their stats be, you know, if you overlaid them into a new game, you know, thinking those questions and having them answer those questions. And really at the end of the day, that's kind of them making a good, you know, metaphor for what this item is. You have to really understand a concept to be able to kind of speak metaphorically about it. And so I really like the idea of getting students to think in systems. And I think games challenge us to think in systems. And if you've ever said like, I am so good at insert game here, it's because you've mastered a system. You know, if you're from the Midwest, I know like my family is obsessed with Euchre, and I swear like my family members can play it on like autopilot because they understand the system and the optimum play. I'm sitting there sweating profusely because I haven't mastered the system. So yeah, that's my passionate soapbox rant about systems.
I love it. And I love not only the rant, because what I'm thinking is everything you just described actually is a great teachable moment for our students as they're designing the games, understanding that what they're doing is designing systems. I think that's such a cool connection to the game itself. And then I know you gave a shameless plug. I love that you have cards that are blank that students can download and we can use in our classrooms. What a great, easy resource. And I'm sure they're gorgeous. I mean, I do want to hear all about the game that you've designed and make sure that we plug that, because I know there's so much work that goes into that. But I love that you then took a component of that to make it a download that we can use in our classrooms. So cool.
Yeah, yeah. The game, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but the game really is meant to just give students a lot of different outlets to demonstrate kind of creativity and innovative thinking. And that was one piece. Here is the cards blank. Everything's fillable. The text, the type of card, the numbers associated with it. You can choose what color the card's going to be if that helps kind of clarify your system and represent your system. And then you have so many interesting conversations that can happen of why did you choose to make it this valuable versus this one being less? You know, what was your thought process there? One of my favorite quotes is just a game, like a game in a classroom or in a training or whatever. It's just it's an excuse to have a really good debrief or conversation afterwards. So the game is this way of you just being able to have this really deep discussion about like what happened, how did you respond, or why did you design it that way, or whatever it might have been. And so I think game design is the same. You can have a really good conversation with students of, it's not so much even the making of those cards, but the conversation of why is really where the magic is, and students showing you how far they've come and maybe some clarifications you need to make too to help them kind of fully realize it and even debate a little bit about it too.
Well, and I think that's a great suggestion that you just made, is now utilizing games as an assessment or evaluation strategy. I mean, something I just worked on with a school district not too far from where I live on Friday was working with assessment kind of creation. We were looking at aligning standards, creating rubrics, and then utilizing those resources to design the right assessment to ask the right questions so we could collect data from the students. A big focus of our dialogue was, it's not about asking the right questions to get the answer, but asking the right questions to get the information from the students that we need, like collecting information essentially was the focus more than anything else. And even if they get the question wrong, what data did you collect? And so I think you focusing on utilizing a game where you're having a discussion and debrief afterward gives you such opportunity to collect data on how the student understanding is and where you need to take your next steps.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, you know, just games set the stage for just a lot of interesting questions to come up, because I go to a lot of playtesters and game designers testing their creation. And there's a lot of just deep questions that go into it, you know, asking why they approached, you know, trying to represent an abstract concept, like why, you know, did you represent going to the dog park as this action? You know, that's a real conversation that happens when, you know, people are designing games. There's a very successful game out right now about taking dogs to the dog park. Actually, I'm very jealous I didn't make it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like torpedoed. Yeah, I just torpedoed my sales. Everybody's like, well, I could either get Game Stormers or the dog park game. It's dogs, you know, all day. So
no,
I think both are worthwhile.
Well, maybe we'll have to go get both. I know Brienne Fennell, who's part of our team, just posted your link in the comments. I would love to have you share a little bit about your game, how it can be used in the classroom, kind of why you designed it. I'm asking you 100 things. I want to hear it all.
Yeah. I think I'll start with that why, just kind of in the theme of, I said, you know, the best part is the why of kind of those student designs or your designs for students to analyze. And really this came out of, I kind of, you know, in kind of connecting to your original point about it's really intimidating to use games in the classroom. I went to an innovator academy for Google, and my central question was, how do we make it less intimidating for teachers to use games and students to use games? And I came out of that saying, you know, talking to a lot of teachers, talking to the other folks at the academy, and I realized I was more interested in, I think it's really hard to sometimes shoehorn a game into a class, but what if the students and the teachers were actually designing the experience that was really tailored for what they wanted to do? And I said, how can I make that more accessible? How can I make game design more accessible? And so that became my focus. I made GameStoreMedia.com and started building resources and showing off student and teacher games that were made. And then, you know, you have that one aha, and mine was December 2020. I said, what if there was a game where you actually like designed a game? At the end of the game, everybody who played made a game, you know, some sort of miniature game out of it. And that was the inspiration of, hey, anybody can be a game designer, because I think that's an intimidating piece. That's very intimidating to say, I, you know, make a game. And so the premise of the game, just to kind of give everybody an overview, is you are creating a 5-card game narrative. So you're kind of giving an overview game story. And so each turn you take actions to kind of acquire cards that'll eventually go in kind of your player notebook that you're working through. And during the course of the game, you can acquire cards in a lot of different ways. You can also make a card, which is kind of fun. So this is very popular elementary, middle schoolers, like half of their game or more is cards they made, but you can roll these visual dice, use the image to create a card and name the card, or you can use kind of the cards you curate during the course of the game too. And so at the end of the fifth turn, everybody has made a 5-card game narrative, and you pitch your game narrative to the other players. And your goal is to kind of get either get the most votes and be kind of named the player's choice best game, or B, all the cards score you points that are in your notebook. And some of them can combo if you meet certain goals, like maybe you mixed and matched a lot of different game worlds. You mix fantasy and sci-fi and horror together, or maybe you did a game that's entirely about the high seas. And so you can also score points by kind of meeting these challenges, you know, as a game designer. So there's a strategic winner. There's the kind of player's choice voted winner. And then the other thing I find with the game that students really love, and I think everybody who plays it, you know, seems to enjoy, is that at the end, everybody is just blown away that they made a 5-card game work. They made it cohesive. It functions. It's a story. And I've never had anybody play where they just said, nope, I can't make this story, or I can't make a game out of it. Everybody truly has that 5-card game. And so that's my favorite part of it.
Oh my gosh. I cannot tell you. I'm thinking through, I have so many questions, and all I am thinking is the answers to my questions is probably just to grab the game, grab a few friends or a few students and say, let's just see if this works or if John's full of it. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's, and I just want to say, I know you mentioned this, Ray, it's, you know, the evolution and the you know, the time and everything. This game started very differently. And it reminds me a lot of, you know, the act of writing. And you think about what people's first draft of novels, what first draft of screenplays, they get so whittled down and distilled down to the best parts, you know, otherwise we'd be watching 5-hour movies and being a lot less efficient as a society probably. But this game started as like very bloated and not fun and complicated. And I've had so many hours of feedback, first and foremost from my wife, who was during the pandemic, she was playtester A, B through Z, you know, playing it. But then also just, I had tons of teachers, students, gamers, non-gamers playtest this and tell me very honestly, this is working. This isn't, this is too complicated. This is confusing. This works. And so it's been distilled down by, thankfully, just a lot of wonderful perspectives from people in the field, people who just, you know, play board and card games, and then just also family and friends who are respect me enough to be brutally honest with me, which is the best thing you can ask for when you're working on something like this. So yeah, it's been really focused in on that. How do we design a game? How do we also, the goal of the game too, is to subtly kind of show students and teachers, you know, kind of some different game mechanics too. Like, you don't just have to have a square board that you roll a dice and go a few moves. This game is all about, there's so many different ways to play games now. Let's show you a few of those kind of tactics, because it's also kind of a subtle, here's how you can now jump off and maybe use some of these in a game you design. So that's another sneaky goal that the game has, is now you take that next step with your game that you kind of laid out.
You know, Bree commented that it's a conference idea. I think, John, you need to apply for a Teach Better Conference 2023, and your session should just be people getting into groups and playing this game and talking about how they can use it in their classroom. Because I think once you immerse people in it and when you start brainstorming with them, I can only imagine the creativity that would come from that session.
Yeah, I've had the good luck of, at conferences, I kind of do a game design in any subject session. And I start, actually, I hand everybody out, you know, the game is made up of the cards that go in your game. You have a storyline, you have two kind of items, we call them, they're your nouns, people, places, things in your game. And then what we call mechanics. So those are the actions you can take. They're the verbs, they're the, what helps you reach your goal, what gets in the way of your goal, what are some rules that govern your game that you know, tweak everybody's, you know, trying to chase the goal. And so I give them a few of each type, and they make a 3-card game and pitch their game to their neighbor. And within the first 5 minutes of the session, everybody's made a 3-card miniature game. And that's another one. I've never had anybody not make a game. And so, like, we start off and I'm like, everybody, congrats, you're all game designers. Now let's dive into how we can, you know, use these principles in the class. So yeah, actually everybody does get to play like kind of a little mini version of the game. And I love starting with it. And I tell people, I'm like, walk away with those cards. I don't want them back. They're yours. go forth and use them in your class.
Everyone in the comments was talking about how they want to be part of that session, that it sounds awesome. John, I think you need to commit live on camera without any information. You need to commit to coming to the Teach Better Conference 2023. We just announced it will be October 20th and 21st in Akron, Ohio. And I don't know how we're going to get you there or what you need, or if you're going to be a speaker, because proposals don't open till May, but just say you're coming and we'll be committed.
It sounds fantastic. I will do I'm going to do my best. And Akron is drivable for me. You know, I think October's open as well, you know, so I like it. I like it. Thanks for the live commit now on camera. And I would be honored. I'll bring many copies of Game Stormers. So.
I love this. We'll make sure you get the link to apply to be a speaker in May, and we'll just force you to come and drive over to Akron. And hey, I can't promise you anything at this point because we haven't released any information, but I'll buy you a beer at the end of it, John, if that helps. Networking will be
done.
Really fun.
Done. There you go. Done and done.
It'll be great. For those of you interested, if you haven't heard about the conference, we're really excited that details will be coming out throughout the next few months. I heard a rumor keynotes and featured speakers will be announced in April. Proposals will be open in May for all of you to apply to be a speaker. We'll then be announcing all those speakers over the summer. And we have a lot more surprises we have yet to announce. So keep your eyes peeled. You can see all those details over at teachbetterconference.com. John, we are going to transition here really quick into our next segment, and we're going to keep this conversation going. Hey everyone, we are back for our Sunday weekly warm up here with John as we're talking through gaming, some great suggestions that we've had so far, so much more to come. John, in this segment, progress over perfection, we're really focusing on taking those challenges and finding ourselves, not focusing on being perfect, but encouraging ourselves and one another to try something new to not only enhance our students' learning ability, but also keep us in love with the work that we do. So I know that at the beginning of our show, before we came live, you're like, Ray, I prepared 3 things I want to make sure I tell everybody. And I think we've only gone through 2. Do you want to throw that 3rd one at us? I know that you shared so much about your game and we're all eager to try. So give us a little insight there.
Yeah, it is. It's spooky how those, you know, that homework that you signed is coming in so handy. You know, I wish I
I
had
love
done
it.
more of it in high school now. So that's just, I was pretty good about that. But yeah, the third piece I think actually goes really nicely with kind of the prompt you set up here. And this is something that I think, again, we do. And I can't stress enough how wonderful it is for students. And it's the idea of creative constraint. And the whole takeaway here is, I think one of the most intimidating things for any of us, for students, for teachers, for anybody who's trying to do a creative act, is the most intimidating thing, I think, is the blank page, the blank slide, you know, whatever it might be. And I think one of the best things we can do to help students kind of thinking critically and connecting the dots between content and kind of a creative prompt is giving them something like a starting prompt or like something unique to kind of spur that creativity. And games do this so well. Think of any party games you've played. Really, what happens is the party game gives you kind of a creative prompt, and then you fill in the blanks with your own uniquenesses, your own take, your own humor. And so the games really do a great job with creative constraint. That is really where I think, especially party games and kind of those abstract games, really challenge us to how am I going to convey the meaning of this word using only images or only using a few keywords, you know, that I give you or whatever it might be. And so that is where I think the magic is. And we can easily just kind of take some of those creative constraint ideas from games and apply them to our own. And so I know, like, you know, I've already plugged GameStormers a lot, but a lot of the mechanics of GameStormers are about creative constraint. So I told you know, one example was I give people at the start of my session, like, I give them a handful of, like, here's two storylines, here's two items, here's two mechanics, make a three-card game narrative working in one of each. So I'm giving them, hey, choose one or the other, one or the other, one or the other. I'm giving them three choices to string together to make a game. I have gone from come up with a game idea, no prompt. You know, if I asked myself to do that, I'd be really intimidated. But, you know, as somebody who doesn't feel comfortable designing games, that's extremely intimidating. But now I've said, just fill in the creative gaps between three of these things after whittling it down from six. And that's a very doable thing. So ways that you can do this in the classroom, you know, one thing that I mentioned, you know, with the game, and I'm just going to show off some of our card art because it's great. So here's like our blacksmith shop card because, you know, just amazing art. But one thing that you could do is just take, it doesn't have to be our game, but our game has amazing art that I think would spur creativity. But I used to do this like a decade ago is I would give my students just, I'd find the most like really surreal or interesting images on the internet. And I give them those, and then I'd have them connect their vocabulary. You know, vocabulary is not fun to study, but here's some abstract images. It might be, I found like an off-road lawnmower racing competition, and it was like guys jumping a mud jump on lawnmowers, and like use some of the vocab from our week, you know, to describe the action and show me the meaning of that sentence. You could do this with any content or concepts connected to the visuals. We have, again, shameless plug after I grab them here. We have some visual dice. You might have seen this before. Rory's Story Cubes are cubes that just have visuals on it. This is dice from our game that students can use to make a card, but have them roll the visual dice and then connect it to the content, combining one or more dice. I've seen this done on assessments. I know Michael Matera, who's a big gamification figure, he had it literally on his tests and quizzes. Like students would actually roll the dice and connect it, the vocab that was listed on the test, to show its meaning. So, I mean, playful assessment can be on your assessments, right? So that's, you know, just a few ways of creative constraint, giving students these entry points that are a little less mundane than just define, use in sentence. You know, again, use in sentence was an intimidating task for me as a student or as an adult. But hey, you know, grab a few of the item cards and now connect it to the definition for tyrant or whatever it might be, you know? So you've just given that student that creative constraint to, you know, to dive in. So that's one of my favorite ones. And so I think that's just a great opportunity to dive in. And then on the vein of, I told you I was going to bring it back to the, you know, to the shut the box. But as a kid, I do this all the time. I used to overlay and kind of add my own theme onto games. And so Shut the Box doesn't typically have a theme, right? But a fun task for students is take a game that you really love and overlay the theme of what you're learning on top of a game, you know, that you're learning about. That's what we call a reskin. Probably the most famous example is Monopoly is the most reskin game of all time. You know, there's a I hope I'm not making it, but like there's a Wisconsinopoly. I'm wearing my Wisconsin shirt, sorry to everybody from the greater Midwest Illinois region. But you know, there's all these different opolies out there of everything. There's Super Mario Opoly, you know, just because we need a game themed game apparently. What a cool challenge for your students. Overlay a theme onto a game you know. One example I always did with my students is chess. And so, you know, we're reading Romeo and Juliet, and tell me which character is which piece and why. And one of my favorite examples is this student said, well, I think Romeo and Juliet are the knights. And I'm like, okay, go on. And they're like, well, they do a lot of erratic kind of dumb things. And what does a knight do? It moves in these L's around the board. They're like, the knights always seem to die in the beginning, right? You know, you lose your pawns, then you lose your knights.
It's
like,
true.
Yeah. So spoiler alert for anybody who doesn't know, Romeo and Juliet, they both die. I feel like I'm not spoiling it because literally it's in the first like paragraph of the play, but they die in the end. And so this was a student's analogy. And I'm like, show me that you know that play. I mean, right there, great metaphorical thinking by overlaying Romeo and Juliet onto the pieces. So I think that was just a cool example of just thinking about re-theming or re-skinning a game to make it, or saying, okay, you overlaid it, but it doesn't quite work. How could we remix the game to make it more like that, right? You know, how could we make it feel a little bit more like that game? What would you tweak about the game to give it more of that feel of whatever you're learning about that Romeo and Juliet, or what game fits it better than the game we just re-themed for it? So these are all creative constraints. They're all, I'm giving you this world, this little prompt, these visuals, this game. Tell me where you see connections. Tell me where it doesn't work. And you're not starting out from scratch, right? You've got this prompt that can really launch it in. And games, especially party games, are like that little creative constraint, little space that you then kind of riff on as you're given ideas, visuals, manipulatives, whatever it might be. And again, I know people in the chat do these already and aren't aware that they're really designing a game or a playful experience for their students. And hopefully this launches into some other ideas for doing playful learning and game-based learning.
I cannot wait to hear the discussion, not only in our private Facebook group with the Teach Better team, but elsewhere within the whole Teach Better community talking about gaming based off of this conversation. John, you gave us so much to think about, but so many things that are really set up for us to be successful. I really, really appreciate these action steps. Can you give us a little bit about how we can stay connected to you? Because I can only imagine that as educators get started or start to dip their toe in the water, they may need some encouragement or some creative thinking. And it sounds like you're the guy to do it. So how can everybody stay connected?
Yeah, absolutely. So I appreciate too. I know it was put into the chat, but GameStoreMediU.com is the website. Everything on there except for the game, I'll just say, is free. So if you want resources from it, I've got game design resources, and I've got lesson plans that go along with Game Stormers or just any subject. And for many of them, you don't need Game Stormers, but you know, I wouldn't mind if you want to get it, play it with your family, friends. It's meant to be a fun Saturday game, you know, with family or friends, or a school day game in the library or classroom. But then the other way to stay connected too is I'm on Twitter and I tweet a lot about, you know, some of these same principles. I'm just at Jonathan Spike. I often go by John, but John Spike was taken, I'm sure, by some football enthusiast or volleyball enthusiast named John. But yeah, Jonathan Spike on those. Game Stormers has a Twitter and a Facebook group too, if you want to check those out, and a Facebook page. So just if you Google Game Stormers, or if it's like 2007 and you want to Bing Game Stormers, you'll come up with it and find me. So those would be kind of some of the best ways to find the game, myself, my company. The company, and this is all just a passion project. I'm an educator at heart, work with future educators first and foremost. And I love talking about these topics. If you need game suggestions, I swear my only suggestion won't be Game Stormers. I just love games too. So if you want to talk about anything, just, hey, I'm looking for a good gift for this family member. I want to give him a game. I love answering that question. If you want to talk about working in these game principles, I'll also answer that one. That's a little bit of everything I think about how to get in touch with me.
I love it. Friends, don't forget that by subscribing, rating and reviewing, following, these are all ways to support different small businesses, different groups doing great things. So taking a few seconds going and following John and his group over on Twitter really, really does make an impact, as well as if you try the game. I'm sure he'd love to hear how it goes. Make sure to shoot him a review and tell him all the fun times you've had and how the students are responding. John, thank you again so much for joining us on a Sunday to kick off our week. We have a great week ahead, and you only helped us with boosting our creativity today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And thank you, everybody, in the comments. I've been reading through and loving the sharing. You know, we got some shout outs to doing things like Giant Jenga. You know, I've seen Giant Jenga with people writing different things, like making Jenga poetry, you know, like having words on blocks and fun things like that. So, loving the conversations. And thank you again for this opportunity.
Absolutely. Everybody else, please let us know if you need anything or if you have any problem connecting with John. Make sure to reach out. We'll make sure to get you guys connected. We hope you have a wonderful week ahead, and we will see you throughout the week with fun little Teach Better Family celebrations. See you later, friends.